Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining me this week on Tia Time. We'll get to the show in just a moment. First, I wanted to say thank you to all of you who have posted a rating on Apple Podcast. Apple Podcast is an app that can be downloaded to your phone or computer. The algorithm it uses allows more artists and art enthusiasts like yourselves to hear about the show. So if you haven't posted a rating yet, do it now. Thank you. On with the show. Welcome to Tia Time with Artists, the weekly podcast where we discuss the methods, challenges, and real-life experiences of living our creative dreams. What kind of creative warrior are you? Musician, filmmaker, painter, choreographer, poet, sculptor, fashionista? Let's talk about it right now. I'm your host, Tia Imani Hanna. Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining me this week on Tia Time. We'll get to the show in just a moment. First, I wanted to say thank you to all of you who have posted a rating on Apple Podcast. Apple Podcast is an app that can be downloaded to your phone or computer. The algorithm it uses allows more artists and art enthusiasts like yourselves to hear about the show. So if you haven't posted a rating yet, do it now. Thank you. On with the show. Welcome to Tia Time with Artists. And this week, my guest is fashionista, costume designer, fellow Detroit Cass Technical High School alumna, Barbara Chenault. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hi. Thank you for having me, Tia.
Yeah, it's really great to see you and hear you. And I'm so glad that you came on the show today. And I've been reading, you know, about you on Facebook and that you've been doing wonderful things like fashion person to the stars, basically. Now,
no, I'll fill you in on that, and we'll see how that.
Still, it's like over the years, I've seen you with Cyndi Lauper, you worked with for a long time, different artists that I've seen just on your page. So, you know, let's start there. So, Cass Tech, you started art design.
I did. I will go all the way back. I was refreshed. Yes, I went to Cass Tech and was guided into the art department or steered in that to that department by Marion Stevens, who was at the time my instructor and later became dean of the department. But anyway, she was very instrumental in guiding me into the art department because she saw potential. So I started with that. That was definitely my calling. Art I've done all my life and drawn and just dibbed and dabbed and art and drawing and one thing or another. And so then she was instrumental in helping me get to New York. I went to New York to Parsons School of Design, was accepted, did my portfolio work, which led me there to New York and had that great opportunity to be able to go through my parents, of course, who were, I think they threw their hands up after the fact and were like, what have we done? We're sending our baby to New York City. That came after the fact. So luckily they didn't realize it early on. So I did land in New York, got there, went to Parsons for fashion design and illustration and graduated with a degree in that from Parsons and worked my way from there into the fashion industry. So I was in New York for a total of about 7.5 to 8 years and in fashion first, thinking I would pursue fashion design and maybe become a fashion designer. And this was early after college when you're in your 20s and you're restless and you're thinking, oh, I'm not making enough impact and this isn't fun and I'm moving so slow. I'm more like a peon and but all these things that go through your head when you're in your 20s and you want to live in the fast track and move quicker and live an exciting life. So I halted it all. Actually, I had an opportunity. I started off at J. Crew, the retail company. I didn't start in retail. I started in design at the design company, and they launched their first store while I was at J. Crew designing as an entry level designer. Okay. And then I moved on to Anne Klein at the time, which was a thing. And they made some layoffs because of our department. They weren't successful in a sweater line had launched. So they made layoffs. And I took that as an excellent opportunity to shift gears. I never was one to feel defeated by something like that. It was never a gut punch for me. It was more of an opportunity to, oh, great. This is great. I can do something else now. they saved me from myself. Okay. It's kind of that thing where you get a new opportunity. So that's when I had worked on a video or two in New York, helping friends and just being footloose and fancy free. And I liked it. I liked the energy of lights and camera and action and all that stuff. And so once I had this layoff happen, I took a shift of gears and made a plan to just move to California and sort of over New York at the time, enough to switch gears. And I just felt very compelled to go in a way that I had never felt before. It's just like I knew it was what I was supposed to do, was to leave, and that was the right thing for me. So I came to New York, came to LA, Los Angeles in the 90s, and at the height of In Living Color, the sketch comedy show, which was the thing in the 90s. Everybody would rush home to tune in. At least that's what I remember. Rush home, tune in, and see the fly girls and what they were going to be doing that night. And the men on
film,
David Allen, twins. Exactly. That was the hit, the rage at the time. This was, I got to LA in 92.
Okay.
And I got lucky. I landed on my feet. I got here, stayed with a friend. I pretty much thought I only knew him at the time. And he was accommodating, helped me out. I just needed a roof over my head.
Sure.
And then and 3 months later, I landed a gig on In Living Color. They were hiring a new team, and one thing led to another, and I ended up over there. And Michelle Cole, who is a fantastic designer in her own, she does Black-ish, did the seasons of Black-ish, and Mitch that still does Grown-ish, and many other fabulous shows along the way, but those two to speak of. But she was like a mentor. She was the first person I started work with back on In Living. She did In Living Color. Mm-hmm. And I entered not knowing what I was doing and learned the ropes through her. And that kind of launched me into the entertainment business pretty much from there.
That's huge. I don't think you even realize how huge that was.
I don't realize how huge
Don't. I'm just listening to it. My mouth is just dropped to the floor. That is freaking huge.
That it was a big deal. And when you live and breathe and exist in your space, whatever it is, at least I don't realize the magnitude of some of the stuff I've done, and people feel excited for me, or one thing, or my parents are bragging about me and this and that. And I'm thinking, it's just my job. It's my job. It's what I do.
I know,
but come to my head.
How many people get to do
that? That's what I have to remind myself.
It's huge. It's huge, 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 huge.
There's a handful of people in the world that would love, and most people would love an opportunity like that. So many and don't get an opportunity for one reason or another. And so it is huge. And to put the effort I put into it, but not have to wait too long to get in the industry, is a big deal. Well,
even your entry level stuff was huge. I mean, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm a musician. So we don't have entry level. We got this where we are, and that's all we got. I worked this week. Maybe I made $2.
But what we do have in common,
okay,
you being a musician and me being design and a fashion costume person, is the hustle. The preparedness. I had not always do people or in your field, you do have to be prepared. You sing, you do it, you know, play instruments, you have a voice, you have an ear. So that's your preparedness. When the opportunity comes, you're halfway there because you prepared for the opportunity when it comes. And I think for me, that was the case with Cast Tech and Parsons and formal training. Not that it has to be formal, but if you have some knowledge of your field or background or a real passion for it and interest, you'll be that much further along when the opportunity comes. So in that regard, I came out here feeling secure in one way that whatever I fell into, as long as it had to do with clothing or design, that I was already halfway there.
Okay. Yeah. I totally get that, because I tell students that I've had, I tell them the same thing. I say, make a mistake, make it big, make it bigger, but whatever you do, it's going to be, and I do that all the time. I make mistakes constantly on stage, but I just say, it's going to be a musical mistake because I'm a musical person and I have my training. So whatever I do, it's going to be musical. It doesn't matter. If you don't focus on that.
Your mistake, most people don't even recognize it.
Exactly. Exactly. And then because it's like, oh, then I'll be like, oh, there it is. And then I'll just tweak it. And it's no longer a mistake.
Yes.
Because I have the craft already.
Yes.
So
that's how you learn, is you grow from mistakes.
And sometimes you can't save it. And you just say, okay, I can't save that. You just move on.
because you just roll with it. You just roll with it. That's one thing I practice and you get older and you get wiser and better. And so I think I've taught myself in the field and what I do, you beat yourself up and you're like, what decision should I make or what choice should I go with? And to calm myself down, I think I tell myself, there is no right or wrong choice. The choice will come to you, will reveal itself. It's like the choice reveals itself and then it is the correct choice. Whatever it is, wherever it leads you, it is the choice that you were supposed to make, regardless of the outcome. It's the choice that comes, it just comes.
Or it's just the choice that you made at that time. It'd be the best choice because that's the one you made.
It's the
one you can't go backwards.
It's never a wrong choice. It's just a choice.
Just a choice. Yeah. So back up with my mouth on the floor. You got to LA, your Living Color is happening. You're doing design for everybody on that show. Or did you have a particular?
I will tell you how it works. It works because I was entry level or on a Living Color. We were a big team of folks. It was like, I wasn't per se design. We each had a hand in contributing to contributing to the show. And our fearless leader, Michelle Cole, the breakdown is there's a supervisor, there's a whole team. So it's about 10 of us in that instance. It was a large team. And we were essentially shoppers or myself and another woman were designated to pulling rental stock, what we call rental stock. There's in our field, because it's fast paced and it's television, even though it's called costume design, you have many resources to pull from, be it costumes that you rent on a rental basis. Around town, we have tons of rental houses, be it through the studios, major studios, or outside of that. But the resources we go to and we grab what we need, if it's a police cop uniform or a clown costume or a party dress or party dresses. There's tons of Warner Brothers and all these places have their own warehouse and stock that they feed back into their warehouse after they've shot movies. And these get the sort of revolving stock that comes in and out. And you rent it on a rental basis. So I was one of two people that would be asked to, if there was a need, and we know where we're going to find things because we do this and we know what is at our disposal and or if we have to shop for it or if we have to rent it or if we have to build it, if it's something you're just not going to find in a store and it has to be built from scratch. So we have that knowledge to know where to go. And so I was involved in pulling whatever was needed. We read the script. The process pretty much is that we get a script, comes down the pike from the producers, the writers, they send it to us. By the time we get it, our supervisor and our designer breaks the script down, highlights what's needed for us to find to create the characters that are in the script. It was a sketch comedy show, so it's fast paced. Some things were made from scratch, like Men on Film. A lot of that was made from scratch, obviously. There was one girl on our team, and that was her job, was to build those little hats, and that was her thing. So she built the hats, and we had two seamstresses on board that built things. I would either shop or rent, but it got to a point. Michelle was very good at delegating and distributing the workload so that no one had too much. So I think we had two people that would run out to shop. It got to a point where two of us became designated to rent or run over to the studios, the costume houses to rent clothes. And so we had two building, two renting, two shopping, two supervising, and I don't even remember what else. But the point is that we became focused and learned a lot about where to go and get what we needed. You know what I mean? It's two people. One person would shop the west side of town. One person would focus on downtown shopping. One person would focus on the valley and run out to the valley to get, because it's just so, LA is so big and spread out. Mm-hmm. She had her people. It was very smart to do it that way, I think, so that you maximize your time and what you would find. And if you didn't find something, you'd communicate it to someone else and say, hey, I'm not finding this. Can you look for it on where you're going or this and that? So it's a lot of communication. It's a lot of
points. Before cell phones and before.
Yeah. We would page one another. It was crazy. We got it done, but we would page one another and you'd stop and pull over and find a payphone.
Yep.
And you'd take a call.
Yep.
You'd take a call or make a call. and write down some notes and get your assignment to look at your mission, that you're on this quest to find this one blouse or this one thing that nobody's finding and you have to keep your eyes peeled for. So it was all of that juggling to pull off finding these things. And then once there's a schedule that happens where the actors are fit in the clothes that you're looking for. So you have a timeline to get back to the studio based on if a fitting has to happen or not happen, or if it's just needed for the next day's work. And then you have to, so there's all of these moving parts going on that, and then once you're back with your finds, it's a long day and you probably will be going back out again to find more stuff. The other things come up and a constant change is happening. And especially with sketch comedy, it's very fluid. So you may be back and forth all day long. And our hours on that show, it was no surprise on it. We would work 20 hours, 16 hours. This was daily just to pull all those pieces together. It took a lot. We'd be sleeping under racks of clothes and taking cat naps. And it was crazy, but it was fun. And it was exhilarating because we were young. We knew no different.
Right.
And it was exciting. And all the actors were exciting because Jamie Foxx came from that show and J-Lo came from that show and Jim Carrey and David Alan Grier and the Wayans, all the Wayans family. So all of them, and they were young too. So we were all like having fun and laughing and playing and just in interacting. But it was work. You had to get your work done. So you did your work.
Sure.
They did their work. We did our work. It was like going to Cass Tech every day. It really was.
It sounds like summer camp for adults.
Summer camp. We had a blast and they were hilarious. They weren't always on. They are when the cameras are rolling.
Well, sure.
Yeah, it's behind the scenes, we laughed a lot. We laughed all the time. Yeah.
You have to be working that many hours. You're like, what's the word when you're so tired, you can't stop but laughing.
Yes. You needed that pick me up.
Yeah.
The medicine, laughter.
So the show, were you with it for the whole run of the show?
I came on board when I moved to LA. I was only on it the last two seasons.
Okay.
Unfortunately, they did not continue after. I think they did five seasons total. And I keep saying New York, but LA. When I got there, I did the last two seasons. So that was where I ended up. And then, I have an interesting past.
This is amazing. This is like story time. It's like, if it don't happen, she was the fairy princess. And she went out and she got to LA and got on this show and did that. And I'm like, wow.
My life has been, it's been interesting. It's been good. I've been in LA. This is my 30th year in LA. I can't believe
it.
Yesterday, 30 years in LA. And, so after In Living Color, I went on and I did the thing about what I do. It's not always designing. It's like you may be a player on the team. I was still trying to get my footing and figure things out. And it's freelance work. So you take whatever job comes along. And I think one of the highlights, I don't remember the exact shows. In the 90s, I worked on different shows, different Sister. I worked on that show and the Martin show, different shows that were going on back then. I can't remember them all right now. But the highlight that came that you don't know, I don't think, was an opportunity to tour it was 96, 97. And the reason I remember my dates, because it was the Michael Jackson tour.
That little thing
came along. And this business is all about who and keeping relationships and just opportunities. It's about, like I said, opportunities, timing, and relationships. And a friend of mine and a couple friends of mine, one friend had toured with Michael and she didn't want to go back on. She had been on the Dangerous Tour, the Bad Tour, whatever was one of those tours when, unfortunately, all these allegations came out and put a halt to his pop star career, came to a halt for a second. Anyway, that was, I don't know, maybe in the early, like 93, 94. But anyway, he dealt with that stuff. And then toured again on the History Tour that a lot of people hadn't heard of or don't know about. It was History Tour. And I was out on that tour in 96, 97. A friend of mine was supervising and was crewing up and looking for staff for the tour. So I didn't, people think, oh, you designed all this stuff for Michael Jackson. No, I was not designing for Michael Jackson, but I was one of five or six of us on a team. So we were responsible for the background dancers, the band, mm-hmm. the background dancers, the backup singers, and Michael. And Michael always had his own dresser who was with him for years. And the guy that brought me on board, he supervised the team. So we were, it's like your own little, I hate to say sweatshop, but we, in a way, our own little workroom, let's say workroom, because whatever's required of us, repairs happen or embellishments need to happen, or Michael maybe has an idea and wants to change something that from the established costumes and says, hey, I want this instead. We're the worker bees behind the scene that make that happen. So we didn't make the initial designs for the show, but we facilitate anything that happens when the show is already up and running and on tour. So I was on that for 10 months and we toured the world. We went everywhere. Jeez. Except the US and South America. We didn't go to South America. Okay. The South America, we didn't go and we didn't go to the US, to the United States, but we went everywhere else, which was really fabulous. I had traveled before and on my own. And as a kid, I lived abroad in Europe and in Africa, which was just part of my past. So it was like, travel was part of it, was in my DNA. I love just going. I think I'm a gypsy at heart.
How did you end up, your family was traveling?
Yeah. We were in Italy on a Fulbright scholarship. My dad had a Fulbright lecture scholarship and taught at the universities of Florence and Pisa. He teaches English. He was a professor of English and linguistics and African American studies.
Okay.
And so we were in, he taught in Florence and Pisa, and we lived in Florence. And this was from the time I was 10 to 12 years old, we were there. And then we were in Africa because my dad had an opportunity to be the director of the Peace Corps for the country of Liberia. So when I was 16, I guess it was my junior year of high school, I think, I forget what month, whatever it was the beginning of the year. It was like February of my junior year. We left and went to Africa. And by September, I wanted to come back and graduate from Cass Tech with all my friends who, Africa was great, but I wanted my friends.
Yeah, you're a teenager. What are you going to do?
I want to graduate with all my besties. So they let me come back that senior year. I lived with my aunt. You made the Walls family. I don't know if you know the Walls. Not that you would.
I don't think I do.
Maybe not. I only ask because I know we have a long history and that we went to grade school together. And I saw this sixth grade picture from past you as far as sixth grade.
Oh my gosh.
I was trying to recall. Yes. So it's been, we go, I know we weren't like bosom buddies and whatnot, but we still.
Yeah, we go back because I remember you, because you popped in and out, and that's why. And I didn't know where you went. I just knew she was there and then she wasn't there. And then you're a kid, you don't know.
Yeah. One minute I'm gone, I'm off in Africa somewhere.
Yeah. And then high school, so like, well, she's back. So
yeah. Yeah.
I was like, okay. I thought maybe because I went to a junior high or something. So I just said, oh, she's probably at a different junior high. Kids don't know.
They don't know. So I had those experiences early, and which were really fabulous. And who wouldn't want such a thing to happen for their family or their children? That was just eye-opening and enlightening. And it just kind of groomed me to be who I am. And today, obviously, and just be this, I don't know, it's just, like I said, I think that being a traveler and worldly and all of that is just, I get it. It just comes natural. Maybe I get it from my dad. My parents are a little spontaneous and free spirit. So
we're going to go off to Andalusia. Okay, bye. No, that's great. That's great. Yeah. I'm glad you had that opportunity to do that. Yeah. Not very many people get to do that. So it's jaw dropping. Michael. So you did the tour.
10 months. I'll bring it back to that little thing. Did the tour, 10 months, best time of my life. We toured, we worked, you get paid to travel. So who wouldn't want to? And that led me down that was just a part of the portfolio of experiences I gained once I toured. Then I was dipping in and out of tour life. Probably did touring for about 6 years of my life off and on. I've toured with different artists along the way. Michael was my first tour, but I have also toured after that. I toured with Madonna, with Cher, with Lady Gaga, went out a little bit with Britney Spears, Cyndi Lauper, as you mentioned. And then I've worked on Super Bowl. I did the Janet Jackson Super Bowl. And I had nothing to do with her wardrobe malfunction, so don't even ask. No. I know nothing of it. I really literally know nothing of it. And even if I did, I wouldn't admit it on right now.
Of course not. Of course not.
But I truly had nothing to do with it, knew nothing about it. And then it's like your circle is what it is. Once you make connections within the industry, you get next thing someone, hey, are you available? I know about this going on. I can't do it, but can you do it? Are you interested? And that's really how I've gotten work for 30 years. It's all about keeping connections and stuff like that. So each of those tours I was on, it was my job to be responsible for the dancers or the background singers or whoever I was assigned to on whichever tour. I liked it that way, had opportunities to be responsible for the main talent at times, but you are tethered to them in a way that I didn't want to be. Like the beauty of that opportunity is to see the world and get out and see things. And so when you're responsible for the dancers or background artists, your time is your time on your days off. So it was very nice to have the best of both worlds.
Yeah, I get it. I totally get it. You don't have to be the main person that they all run to for everything.
You're not that person that's like on call. So it's like when a work day is a work day, but an off day, it was my off day. So we've hit the road. Yeah, you see a town or you run around and you have wonderful experiences and you eat and drink and you be merry and all that stuff. And it's a lovely experience. So that was pretty much that. And like I said, touring off and on, I think it amounts to 6 years of my time, like I mentioned. And then I decided, okay, enough. It's great to do when you're younger. That helps.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, you have energy and you're lugging suitcases. And so it's fun. It's no doubt fun. And it was a great time, great part of my career. But it got to a point where I'm like, okay, enough. I just don't want to do it anymore. So that brings me to now where I'm solely costume designing and have, I guess, my most recent projects that you'd be familiar with are Mixed-ish. I did the second season of Mixed-ish, which was an ABC network show. Set in the 80s with, I forget our actors right now, but set in the 80s. And then I just wrapped up Cheaper by the Dozen is a show that I did actually a year ago.
That's a movie though, right?
Yes, it's a movie.
Okay.
That was a movie. It's due to come out next. It'll start streaming on Disney Plus. So check it out.
Because I can wait for the credits and see your name.
Yeah, see my name. You'll see. Look for my name on the credits.
Yep, I love that.
Yeah, so please
I'm one of the only people that goes to the movies. My partner and I will go to the movies, and we will watch the credits. We always watch the credits. Yeah, and I found different people that I know, like in the credits. It's very cool.
Okay, very cool.
Yeah,
as somebody in entertainment, you find that people out here when there were movies and people would sit in the movie theater, they do tend to linger and hang out and see if they know who's on the show or whatever. This one, look for my name.
I will. That's great. Yeah. It's just one of those things that I always like those things at the end where it says 30,000 people worked on this film. Like it's something like that. It's 15,000 people worked on this film.
And they just flash, just go so fast, like pause it or hone in or know to look for somebody.
But when you think about the size of that.
Yes.
It's a freaking small city.
It is.
Home.
You're right. There's so much that goes on and such a production and it's a lot of work. That was a project that I felt like if I can do this, I can do anything because it was just a lot of moving parts. Again, I was the designer on that one. But Michelle Cole, oddly enough, we worked in tandem. She it was a collaborative thing, but I did the show. She did Gabrielle. And then I had 14 people every day to dress, 12 to 14 people to dress and have on camera. And so it was a lot of moving parts. We had a great team. Fantastic team. I couldn't have done it without them. And so we're now at the point where there's a screening next week and a little premiere and all that business. So it's fun. It's the first one the first one was actually from the 50s. This is the third one.
Yep.
Yeah. There was Cheaper by the Dozen in the 50s with Myrna Loy and Clifton Wells.
Oh, yeah. I saw that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that one. Actually. Yeah.
Isn't there one with Doris Day too?
I don't know about Doris Day, but there's a one with Bonnie Hunt and Steve Martin.
Okay. Okay.
From, and that was in 2002, I think. Okay. And Ashton Kutcher was in it. And that's the one people really remember, I think. And that, and then now this one is a blended family. It's a take on The Times, where it's Gabrielle is the mom and Zach Braff is the dad, and she's Black, he's white. And when they come together and have some mixed kids of their own, and then she has some kids that she had with a previous relationship and comes to the marriage with her kids, and he has his kids from a previous situation. So it's, and then they adopt a kid. So it's like all this, it's very blended and very modern and current and relevant to what's going on today. Thanks. Yeah. So that's exciting to that it's coming out soon. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll see. I don't know if I should be scared or I don't know how it's going to look. I know what I did at the time. When you see it edited together, I could be very surprised. Like, oh my God, should I be telling people to go see this?
For sure. It's great because people, how did you get that job? Did people say, oh, you're available, definitely come?
Yeah, pretty much. It was, I was finishing, it's all word of mouth for the most part. I do have an agent, but you do, people just say, hey, what are you doing? Are you available? I have a project that I know about or I can't do.
And so, they wouldn't do that if you sucked.
I believe that it looks good. It's just, it's more not that I don't think it looks good. It's more about how it gets cut together.
Yeah. Okay.
You know what I mean? I think from what I did, I feel proud of. Mm-hmm. But then you don't know the editing process.
Sure.
But it should look good. Yes. I don't want to downplay it. I'm proud of what it was.
Oh, that's so great though. That's really great.
Yeah.
So, you know, so all the hustling has paid off.
Yes, the hustling has paid off and continues, hopefully, to pay off because I've got a few more years. it's right now I'm in between projects. The hustle is real. It's mm-hmm. like I'm looking for the next. I don't know what's next just yet. But it's, you get to a place where at this point in the game, you know how to manage the expectation, manage your money. Mm-hmm. And just, I'm at a point where I would just like to, thankfully I have a husband who agrees, but it's, I want to just, I want to say that I want to do what I want to do, but I can and I can't. Obviously you have to work and you have to, you can't always get the jobs you want. I'm not there. I'm not saying that, but I'm trying to find that work-life balance. And if it means not doing something I don't want to do, I don't want to do it. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's where I'm at this point. I just want to work and it's working out. It's working out. Everything's great. Everything's fine. So I'm working, but you want to work on what you want to work on. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I get that. I totally get that. So did you sit down with some Gordon Ramsay and say, okay, here's my financial thing. Like, how did you approach that?
Trial and error. I think, like, cause I've been here long enough and you figure out, okay, I shouldn't be buying these $300 and $400 shoes anymore. You know, maybe that's not the best idea, or you got to outgrow being in a position to borrow money from your friends every time you turn around because you didn't allot for your rent payment properly mm-hmm. or something. So I think when I was in the business, I have a lot of stories and memories with my dear friend, and we were footloose and fancy free, and we were living the life like we were on Sex and the City or something, always shopping, always indulging, running around and trying to be cute and drinking and eating all day long when we were in between, even when we were working, I feel we always found time. There was always time when you were younger. There was always time. You always got it in. You worked and
you didn't sleep. Hard.
You didn't sleep. You didn't sleep as much, and you get right up and bounce back and keep going. And life was a ball. Mm-hmm. And then you get older and things, you have responsibilities. And so it gets to a point where it's like, oh, wait a minute. I can't be late on a mortgage payment. This is real. So that freelance lifestyle, you start to manage it and figure it out. And
okay.
And it helps. And my husband is, he works steadily where I work freelance. So that helps too.
What's he working? Does he work in the arts as well?
He works for indirectly in the arts. He works for a staging company. They produce, it's not a staging company that builds stages per se, but they build decks and platforms for small events that would need some type of staging or platform system. And mm-hmm. so they manufacture the product, and they also have a rental business as well as you can rent the decks and I'll purchase them if you need. But so anyway, it caters to the industry as well.
Okay. Know? No, that's cool. And that's probably a little bit more steady
Yes, that's more it's that steady. Helps. It helps. It helps. So we balance each other out.
Yeah. That's great. That's great. Like, you know, I just saw the new Sex and the City recently, and I was looking at some of the clothes on that show. Oh my gosh.
Fabulous stuff.
Was that like ever a dream thing that you really wanted to get on that show or anything like that?
That show would be a dream. To be honest, I haven't seen the reboot of it because I just haven't, but what I've seen, it looks fabulous and just as amazing as the first when as far as the clothes go. That is a bit of a dream job. I actually, even though working with high-end fashion and all of that is fun, but I tend to lean into period. I would love to do something that's period, that has real substance, a good story, the history. I get into the history part of it, I guess. I like history. Yeah, that would be my number one genre to do.
Fantasy, like Game of Thrones type of stuff, in period stuff, or because they have medieval, basically.
It's true.
Yeah, there's castles and crowns, or like the Gilded Age is on HBO right now. So that's like 1890s in New York.
That would be fun.
Or have you ever thought about working at the BBC as an exchange or anything like that? I just wonder if that's possible.
What's funny is I didn't work at the BBC, but I was, before I got married, I was in a relationship and I lived in London for 3 months. Mm-hmm. And so I was trying to figure out what I could do with myself. And I had with the intention on marrying this guy I was dating at the time, but that didn't work out. But while I was there, I was like, I need to be looking into the BBC and seeing what kind of work I can get. And I'm very adventurous and adventuresome in that way, where you get creative when you have to find out, like, what can I do? I have this situation in front of me, now what kind of thing? So once I was I was in Italy before the Michael Jackson opportunity came, and I wanted to stay in Italy. And I was like, let me go down to Cinecittà, which is their cinema sort of studio place in Rome. And but the Michael Jackson thing came before I could work that out. But I was like, I was dipping in debt. I had my toe and I was like, how can I stay in Europe? What can I do to find this place for myself here? So I don't know if they have an actual exchange program. That would be interesting. I don't know that it works that way, but
I don't know. Cause I know there's all these different rules about Brits working in the US and US working in the UK. So there's rules or something, but it's just one of those things because they do so many period pieces there.
True, true.
And I don't, Canadian television, sometimes they do period stuff. Lately, they've been doing Flappers and things in the 1890s, 1880s.
It's funny because jobs come up in the 1800s would be fabulous to do, any period, really. I'm not so much like Game of Thrones type, but, and probably, when I think period, I what speaks to me is like early 20th century, anywhere early 20th century to the 50s, 60s. But you never know, given the right opportunity, it's all fun. You have to do the research and really delve in and learn the period and get the details in those instances too. I guess it depends on the show, but a lot of like Bridgerton and things like that, and all those costumes are built and made and all of that.
Yeah, Bridgerton was fabulous for the sets and the costumes.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing.
The show was the show, but it was fun. It was a guilty pleasure show, but I thought the sets and the costumes were, and even the music, really good. I was really taken aback by that stuff.
Very outstanding.
Yeah.
It's memorable to say the least.
Yeah. That, and what was the Christmas movie that came out? Yeah. There's what's his name? I can think of his Ghost Dog.
Which one is this? Oh my God.
It's on Netflix. And
oh my goodness.
And I can't think of the guy's name. And all I can think of right now is Ghost Dog. I have COVID brain because I had COVID. And so my thoughts get lost. So I can't pull it.
I wish I could help you with that one. I can't think of what you're talking about.
He's a famous Black actor. He used to be really big, but now he's really lean.
You'll have to have, somebody will have to.
It's a Christmas movie that just came out like in 2020, I think.
Oh, goodness.
Black Christmas show.
A Black Christmas show.
Yeah, it's really well done. The costuming was fabulous.
Wow.
It's a musical. Now I have to look it up. I'm going to look it up. So
see if you can look it up.
I'm gonna try and look it up, because if I could. Jingle Jangle.
I see. I still don't. It's, I can't help you with that one.
Forest Whitaker.
Oh, of
course. And Keegan-Michael Key.
Is okay. In it. Oh, okay.
And
he's a Detroiter.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, Keegan-Michael Key. He's from Detroit. He's friends with my cousin. So cool. I had that discussion with him. You know, I've worked with him once or twice, and I was like, "Hey, you went to college with my cousin," and so that was the extent of that.
But it's very cool. So if you haven't had the chance to see it, Jingle Jangle.
Jangle, have to.
Yeah, I thought it was very well done. The dancing, the music, the acting, the story was cute. It's a Christmas movie, but costuming was great.
And you don't typically see Black Christmas movies.
Oh, you don't. That's why it was very...
It's memorable. Were like, hey.
Yeah. So
I'll have to look into that and see what that's about.
And I thought it was pretty well done.
But... I'll pull it up or stream it or whatever you do nowadays. Thing.
So completely different subject. So how did you get an agent? How does that work? When you're not an actor, how do you get an agent?
It's a whole, how did I get an agent? It's so tricky, this business. It's because the whole thing of getting an agent is they want to make sure you're marketable and make sure they want you to bring something to be able to bring something to the table, and you want them to be able to help you. So it's a two-way, it is a situation where you can have a little bit of a portfolio already built and approach them and say, hey, listen, are you taking on new clientele? You can cold call them just to get feedback. In my case, again, it's all about who refer you. I had a referral, which led me to an agent. And I'm good for, if I just get a name, I don't have to. If you can call someone and say, hey, I know so-and-so, and they gave me your name and number, right, people will perk up and say, they'll give you some of their time if you have something to go on instead of just, hey, my name is, when I'm looking for an agent, and they don't want to listen as much. So I said, let me find a name or someone I know, because there's somebody out there that I know who has an agent. And if I can name drop, then I will get the attention of the agent at least long enough to hear me out, which is pretty much the way I did it. And so they listened to me, and we talked, and then I kept nurturing the relationship and stayed in touch with them, because they weren't going to necessarily stay in touch with me, but I'd find a reason to call them or to check in. And the first job they landed for me was the mayor. It was a TV show with Yvette Nicole Brown, and she played the mom to a little guy whose name I'm forgetting. But that was what got me in the door with them. And they were like, oh, okay, you've landed the interview. They send me out on a job, they give me an opportunity to interview. I'd go out, got the job. And once that happened, then they're like, oh, okay, now we can, they get 10% of that money. They're like, oh, now we can talk. You're marketable.
Hey. You're marketable. That's right.
Yeah.
Get some cash. So let's send you out on this gig.
Work. Yeah. This relationship we can nurture this now. So that's how that works. It's all I'm telling you. It's all about, for anyone out there who's listening to this, it's so much about keeping good relationships and networking and seizing opportunities when they come, if it feels right.
It's one of the things. I know I'm not good at that. I know what I'm good at, but actually my partner, she's always hitting me in the ribs with her elbow. What are you doing? Oh, not, I'm working on this, but not much. She's, you just did this. And I'm like, I don't remember.
So you understand, we're artists. We think the same. We feel the same way. Like, we're not self-promoters.
No, you do the work. You do the work. That's why you have to have somebody around you that's, no, you just did this and this. But to have to be that for everything all by yourself is really
right. Hard. It is hard. It's very hard. And that's why I did approach the agent, because I was like, okay, this is not, I want to do so much more, and who can help me? Because I can't promote myself. I can't sell myself. I'm not good at that. It's working out. And it's been a few years now. I get interviews all the time. That doesn't mean I land them, but I have more opportunities than I would have if I didn't have an agent. That's where it pays off. I think I need to, or I want to, like I said, you want to start getting what you want, though, because it's there. there are opportunities that come, but I'm like, oh, there's so much crap out there. There's so much stuff that's out there that I feel like it's a little far and few between when you really get something of substance and something hearty and meaty and challenging and that really speaks to you. Those don't come along as much as you'd like, but nonetheless, you got to take the good with the bad. It's what it is.
Now, when you get to you've been there doing this, like you said, you've been out there for 30 years. You've been doing this work. So yeah. At a certain point, you say there's a cutoff, like you personally set, it has to pay this much money for that kind of work. Or is it just they're offering this and you just say you negotiate higher, or is there an internal line that you draw?
Probably the answer. I think it just depends. I think in some instances, it depends on the opportunity or what the job is. And obviously you do anyway, people work to make money, but I think too, I'm not too above a good opportunity either. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you this one, this was an opportunity that came where I worked for free, almost free, but I worked on the TV show, Mike and Molly, okay. That TV show, and worked up, this was a few years back, maybe in 2016. And I met Melissa McCarthy's stand-in. We became friends, a wonderful woman named Tamara Rupert. And she's a director, and she was standing in for Melissa at the time, but wanted to pursue her directing career. And so after the show finished, Tamara was always working behind the scenes, just writing and creating her own projects and whatnot. So we befriended each other on set, and she was like, listen, I'm going to Japan. And she has this affinity for Japan because she taught English in Japan years earlier and just loved the culture and one thing or another. So she had been looped in with this woman, Valina Hasu Houston, who is a playwright. And they wrote a little short film that she wanted to produce in Japan because it was cheaper, easier, obviously. Her sets and everything was Japanese and her cast and whatever. And it was just a small cast of three people about a legendary Japanese poet and whatnot. I said, hey, if you do that, something like that. She approached me about the clothes and she said, I can't pay you. If you find a way over, if you can get to Japan, I'd love to have you. I trust your work. I know you're talented, and blah, 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 blah. And so I was like, yeah, I'd love to do that. This is something I've never done before. It's out of the realm of opportunities that come. And so I found myself paying my way to Japan, worked on this project, built all the costumes. There were about 19. She had this concept of these kimonos that were different colored kimonos worked throughout the story to tell the mood of the story. Okay. Essentially, the main character, it's a love story. And this woman has a suitor who comes to her and wants to date her and get to know her. And she's like, you need to come to me 99 nights consecutively before I will give you an opportunity to be with me, before you gain my trust and my love. You have to come to me every 99 nights. And the project is called Path of Dreams. You can see it. It's on YouTube. It's like okay. A short little trailer and it's a quick thing, but it's called Path of Dreams. And it's the story of Ono no Komachi. Okay. Who is, like I said, a legendary Japanese figure. And it's subtitled. It's in Japanese, subtitled in English. So it was definitely a unique experience. But it was something challenging, something that just reminds you of why you got in the business in the first place. You know what I mean? It's like, sure. I have these talents. She trusted me to the fullest to do what I do. I produced the costumes, sewed them on my little home machine here in my living room. Mm-hmm. And we had fun with it. And each kimono is a different color and it works throughout the theme and the mood of the story. And it came out, it was just one of those things. Again, it's like a challenge that you take on and it's, if I could do this, I could do anything. Cause we've packed everything up, put it in suitcases, traveled to Japan, figured it all out, shot on the roadside somewhere in our community and had a great experience. And then mm-hmm. I stayed a week longer and traveled and had a moment, but it's all seizing the opportunities when they come. You just never know what it, that in that case, it wasn't about the money. It was about the experience.
That's awesome. Awesome. Yeah. I'm definitely going to check out that movie. And can check out that movie on YouTube. So that's awesome. And then Cheaper by the Dozen's coming out any day, at least at the time of this recording. So by the time I get this edited, it might be already out, but that's, you know.
Exactly. Comes out March 18th. Starts streaming on Disney Plus.
That's great. Oh, yeah. Thank you so much for being on the show today. And so great catching up with you and hearing your fabulous stories. Like, this is why I do this show, because it gives me hope. The artists are working and they're making a living and they're thriving. So that's great, because
it's so inspiring. I listen to your show and it's really wonderful what you're doing, because there is a community out there and it's nice to know. It's just sort of, I was just taking it back to our sixth grade moment or our Cass Tech moment. It's, you never know where people end up and who they become and where they're going to go in their lives. So it's really neat to see what you're doing, and you're learning about what I'm doing and other people are doing. And it's just, everyone has their own lane and their own, you just never know what it all means until you're looking back on everything. And this is why this had to happen for me to get to this point. And now look at me now.
And yeah. And it's someday I'm probably going to make at least one short film. Because I've always wanted to do it.
Do it. If not now, when, as they say.
It's one of those things, like I have a list on my phone of probably 30 albums I want to make. So it's one or the other. You can't do both.
Well, surprises, you can do it all. It's a limit. Or call on the people that you know around you. Call me. I'm now in your roster, on your all roster. Right. Call and tap into. So when you're ready, let me know.
Oh, thank you so much, Barbara.
Thank you. So good seeing you.
Good to see you.
Or hearing you.
Well, we're working on Zoom, people. We're working on Zoom.
I'm seeing Tia while we're talking. So it's a pleasure. It's been a treat. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thank you for joining us this week on Tia Time with Artist. Make sure to visit our website at tiaviolin.com, where you can subscribe to the show and never miss an episode. Please leave us a rating at iTunes Podcast or wherever you listen to podcasts. We really appreciate your comments, and we will mine them to bring you more amazing episodes. I would like to thank this season's sponsors. Michigan ArtShare, a program of Michigan State University Extension, is a partner in supporting the Tia Time podcast, and Greg Hill's Cold Plunge Records. Without their support, this podcast would not be possible. Thank you so very, very much. If you would also like to contribute to the show, you can find us on www.patreon.com/TiaTime1. That's Tia Time, the number one. To continue the conversation about topics discussed on this show, or start new ones with like-minded people, join us at the Tia Time Lounge on Facebook. Thank you for listening. See you next week at Tia Time. Thank you for joining us this week on Tia Time with Artist. Make sure to visit our website at tiaviolin.com, where you can subscribe to the show and never miss an episode. Please leave us a rating at Apple Podcasts to expand the reach of the show. We really appreciate that help. And we'd also like to say thank you so very much to our sponsors, Michigan ArtShare, a program of Michigan State University Extension, and Cold Plunge Records. And also all of our Patreon supporters. We couldn't do it without you. Thank you. We'll see you next week at Tia Time.